Welcome back to NLP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Miles Caparis from Include Software, Neil Glatt from Grow the Bench, and Brett Lemke from RM Landscape. How's everyone doing today? We got a big, big day today.
Dude.
Yeah.
Number 52. Podcast number 52.
That's a final episode of season one.
Full year.
Oh, we have to leave a cliffhanger, right? Is that how this works? And you got to just like some big gasp of what's going to happen next season.
Yeah. Spoiler, we come back next week with another episode.
That's right.
This podcast continues uninterrupted.
We will generally use the word culture, landscape, empowerment, mentoring. Right? Yeah, mentoring. Yes, there's some keywords that will always be used. So, yes. But still, exciting to be here. Exciting to have made it to and on our way to season two. Full steams ahead.
Yeah, it's awesome. We got a good guest today, too, I think, to finish off the season. So who wants to do the intro on that?
Well, I'd be happy to, Miles.
Cool.
One part acrobat, one part extreme expert rope climber, one part tree physiologist, and several parts competitor and thrill seeker, Mark Chisholm is a third generation certified arborist with his family owned Aspen Tree Expert Company in New Jersey. His expertise in tree care has made him a sought-after consultant and industry spokesperson for the world of arboriculture, and he regularly travels the globe to consult with international arborist associations and conducts educational sessions nationwide on behalf of Steel. He has done numerous national media interviews, including the Weather Channel's Wake Up with Al and ABC's 2020. Chisholm won the International Society of Arboriculture New Jersey Chapter Tree Climbing Championship 21 years in a row, and has won the ISA International Tree Climbing Championship in 1997, 2001, and again in 2010. Mark currently holds the world record in the 50-foot secured footlock climbing event with a time of 13.8 seconds. Mark demonstrates an enthusiasm and passion for trees that makes him a perfect fit for Team Steel and an excellent resource to the Steel customers and tree lovers. Anything I missed, Mark?
I think you said more than you needed to be honest. But no, that sums it up. I mean, it's obviously you can tell I'm pretty involved in what I do. It's something I have a passion for, obviously.
Well, and I like the intro, right? With just that, what the makeup of your world, right? That's a fun combination of it. And I suppose it's a testament to, you know, you and other guests we've had, the passion, right? Goes beyond just the day job. It goes into your life. It's a family part of all this. And so that's cool. And I think we'll dig into a lot of that today. But that world record really for the 50 foot climb, holy cow. Mm-hmm. I had at SUNY Cobleskill, we had a boriculture. I call it a boriculture. You call it arboriculture, dear Neil. I don't know what the right answer is there, but
you got me.
And so we had an NCLC. That was the competition I did, right? But I was the belayer. We had a tree climbing guy. He was good. And then I had to do the bag toss and the piece there, and a new respect, a great deal of respect for those that can get up there, the risk, and the confidence that you need to have to do that job. But so really impressive industry and career path.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, to be honest with you. I mean, people always like asking me like how do you still stay involved? I mean, even to this day, I mean, I've been doing this since I'm 12 years old, and you know, our business model gives me an opportunity to get out of the field in a lot of different ways if I want to. You know, it's my choice to be in the field. Even today, you guys can probably see outside my where I'm sitting to be quiet, but I'm doing a crane job for today. So I was just hanging off the crane, cutting trees down today. And there's just something about going to work, feeling like you want to be there. You know, there's too many people don't focus on, you know, the idea of just being happy doing what you're doing.
I think that's so important that you have that passion. So is your day-to-day mostly working with the family company? Are you usually on the job site? Are you more making management stuff, or are you trying to break world records on a weekly basis.
Breaking world records is always fun, but no, majority of my time is mainly in the field with the crews, working, doing job site work, training along the way. Like today I have some new guys with me on my crew that I'm teaching how to do crane removals, like large scale removals, and giving them the ins and outs of that. But I do a lot of other things too, as you probably know from what you just mentioned. I mean, on the management side, our business, our family business has grown through the years, like many do. And we are a full-fledged, you know, company, meaning we have a lot of different areas of kind of diversity within the company, from sales to management to working with the commercial residential side. Then we do power line work for utility companies. And then we also do plant health care, and we took on lawn and turf care this year as well. So there's a lot of different things that kind of moving parts, if you will.
Oh, the lawn care, that's just gonna be boring for you. It's your feet on the ground the whole time. I mean, like, that's what's gonna get you up in the, and what was the extension to those service lines? What opportunities present themselves to go that way?
You know, there's a few things involved there. One is our plant health care division. We took on another employee that had a lot of background in lawn care. And he said, you know, it's another service we could provide. And we had some customers through the years ask us, why don't you do lawn care? Because you do all our tree care. And so they'll hire us to do the pruning, the removals, the fertilizations, the insect disease management. And they say, you guys are so good. You care so much about keeping things green. Why don't you do lawns? And so we hired a couple of guys that came with a background doing our plant health care. And next thing you know, we said, why not? We'll listen to our customers and add a service. So last year we kicked it off for one season, and we had just over 50 clients that we wanted to test the waters with and see how it went. And now this year we opened it up to more of our current clientele, and we took on, I guess, about 140 clients this year.
You know, that's something we haven't really talked about a ton, is when customers push you to a new service line, but also the process of trusting relatively new employees to, you know, really bring the expertise and energy to something that you're not, you know, a current line that you're currently in. What was that process like, and how'd you work through it? It sounded like you didn't just jump, you spent some time preparing and easing into it.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of what we do at our company is we try to listen to anybody who has ideas about how to grow the business or improve the business. You know, we're a smaller company. We're about 42 employees or so. And we try to give everyone an opportunity to give us some type of insight to what they see from a fresh look. And a couple of the guys inside our plant healthcare in particular really thought it would be a good thing to add. And when I spoke to people in the industry of tree care who also did lawn care, it became kind of apparent that it was a natural thing that you could add that service very easily. It's almost the same equipment per se, and a lot of the knowledge base is there. So the process was relatively easy. It was just kind of coming up with what we would need to do for marketing, what we would need for new equipment, and any kind of documentation you got to do for like DEP and things like that. And once we understood that, it really wasn't a big step. It was just, let's go see what it is. It's not a big investment. And if we don't like it, we always can back out of it next year.
You know, I think the alternate there to go into the tree care and the tree world removals and pruning, that is, seems like a very challenging, not an easy entry piece to it. Mm. And so certainly a lot of people out there attempt and to do this work on, you know, a range of professional degrees of that work, but it scares you sometimes, right? And the amount of risk and the seriousness of the tree care world is very high,
for sure. And you know, I did a presentation at iLandscape show in Chicago 2 years ago, and one of the things they wanted me to discuss was, how do you add this service to your landscape business, which is tree care? And I told them, I said, honestly, there's a few levels you can go at. The lowest level would be to develop a relationship with a company like mine, and we give you landscape jobs, you give us tree jobs. The next level would be you do low level tree care jobs like removing bushes, stump grinding, small trees, nothing large scale, and then sub in a company to do big stuff to still satisfy your needs. And then beyond that, as you mentioned, it gets more intense. It becomes, you know, the idea of workers' compensation will change. The training is huge. If you don't get the right training, the accidents that you're going to have and people getting hurt is just not worth it to me. So it's a big undertaking for sure.
So you grew up doing tree care, right? So like this is, mm-hmm. So does the risk not faze you as much, or like, how do you train out that risk? Like, what are some ways that you tackle that? Because obviously you have a good business around that model, so you're making it work, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I think everything revolves around the idea of, you know, it's not just a saying that you work safe, you know, it's something that you have to take seriously from the top down, meaning every person holds each other accountable. Like if I'm on a job site, I can't not wear hearing protection when it's required or eye protection when it's required, even for one cut, chainsaw protection. Like I follow every protocol that we have to follow and I demand it of other people. And when I see it, I say it. And so does everyone around me. I think that's part one. Part two is realizing what training you need and how much to focus on it. Like we do weekly safety briefs company-wide, and then we do all this internal training. And then we also send people externally for training to trade shows, to bring in exterior trainers. And, you know, part of my life, as you kind of mentioned earlier, and I didn't really elaborate on it, is doing like training events, like for different organizations around the world. I've been to many countries to teach people how to do tree climbing related activities, removal, rigging, electrical hazards, crane use, you name it. And the thing I find is still important is you can't be the only voice in training in your company. Even if you are a world level trainer, you have to still bring people to other voices because it doesn't always hit home coming from the same person regularly or just from the same person at all.
I think that's parenting 101 too, right? Where you, I'm learning that with the kids. That, yes. It's just, they pin us against each other and then still can't even get through them. Yeah.
Very true.
But I suppose, you know, you being out there in front, right? We see those infographs where the leader is, they all say, hey, hang on, I'll do this, right? Rather than pointing and saying, you know, go charge that hill kind of piece. And so it sounds like that's, like you said, it's a choice, but it probably offers a lot of opportunity to be really keep those initiatives very strong and clear. Right. And I recognize that where it slips on my world most often is I present it, but then it has to go through managers to teams, to that first crew person that's been here for the first week. It just doesn't get there really well. And it's a struggle to keep that initiative there. And so I wish often that what you're doing, the conscious effort to be out there and present, is something I have to recognize more often too.
Yeah, it's very important. And you know, I think having that presence also does a lot for morale, and morale does a lot for safety too. You know, there's a lot of things that comes along with the training aspect and the encouragement for the employees to get more training. And there's a lot of ways to kind of incentivize that. Some of it obviously is just an increase in pay, but there's also other things like you can get to a certain level of a within a company, if you get another credential, you can become, say, a supervisor of some sort because you have these other credentials that you gain, which is, again, helps you, but also helps the company. So it's kind of one hand washes the other, but it's a good model, I find, to instill that in the company.
Given that you have so many, you know, credential hoops and licensures in your, you know, niche of this industry, do you find it easier or harder to recruit than maybe some of us who are just doing landscape maintenance?
You know, I think recruitment is a difficult discussion for all of us right now. I do find that a couple of things help us as a company that I see now, because I listen to many, many people from all over the country, all over the world about what's going on in the industry, because I have a lot of friends that have their own businesses of all different sizes and all different focus points. But what I do find that's consistent that I see within ourselves as well is companies that have a good kind of system of sharing like a caring environment for your employees, meaning that you're willing to train them, pay them to get trained, and then pay them once they get a credential, and then encourage them to grow as a person or as an employee to help them move along. I think that goes a long way. When you do that, you attract a better quality person, I see, and you also hold them long-term. Somebody, I had a guy come all the way from Wisconsin yesterday to work with my company. He just wanted to come watch us work. He's a tree guy, owns his own deal out in Wisconsin. So Elliot contacted me on Instagram of all places and said, hey, can I come see you, you know, your company and whatever? And I've gotten these requests before, but what's interesting to me is he right then and there told me his motivation, and it was a great motivation. Like he wanted to do it to help grow and learn and whatever. But he also said to me, which is something unique, he said, what could I do to make it interesting for you? What could I do to get you to say yes on this? I'm not there to just take, I want to do whatever I can to help you too. And I thought, that's the person I want to speak to. And one of the conversations we had yesterday after the jobs were done was the idea. He said, why do you grow your business to another level? Why do you go from 20 employees to 30, 30 to 40? What's the driving force? Is it money? And I said, absolutely not. I said, profit margin wise, there you're going to have levels where you gain a lot, and then you take steps back as you grow, because there's like growing pains where you don't find that flow. I said, the biggest reason that we really want to grow the company, meaning my brother and myself in particular, is that we want to give people like that, that feeling that we're in a place that is going to help us grow, give us places for new opportunity to not be stuck doing one job for the rest of our career if we choose not to, you know. So the biggest driving force is opportunity for everyone who's here to keep those employees, because losing employees that are quality is something I don't want to see happen.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting to hear you talk about the value of culture and where people stand as an answer to not only solving recruiting, but also safety. And I do a lot of work with Gallup, and one of their famous case studies is DTE Energy out of Detroit. Really hazardous job working on power lines, you know. But from the 5 years in 2011 through 2016, their OSHA rate, recordable incident rate, decreased from 1.19 to 0.45 at the same time that their engagement, how people felt about where they were working, went from 30th percentile to 90th percentile of global workplaces, right? And, you know, all those tracks are just, I have a best friend at work. The mission and purpose of my organization makes me feel like it's important. In the last 6 months, somebody's talked to me about my growth and development, right? And it's those psychological things that really create a safe workplace, not just, you know, having a safety mindset. In addition to easing recruitment, easing retention, and increasing profitability and stuff. So it's interesting to me that you start with that, right? That's what's core to you. It sounds like even more than safety, which is the constant focus that you're doing.
Well, I think safety industry-wide is always in the focus. You know, like we do job briefings every day that stress the focus on safety. We call each other out day in and day out on the job site if we see one little thing that you could do better to not put yourself at risk. And I think so that always comes first. You know, you can't have a good quality company if you're always having accidents, but every company will have an accident, you know, on some level, whether it's a car accident or breaking a fence, especially in tree care, there's so many variables. So I try to tell everybody, don't beat yourself up on that, but don't get lazy. Don't cut corners. Don't do things to save time that puts more risk out there for you. It's not worth it. So I think that is the focus, but the bigger focus outside of that is, you know, being a quality company that people want to work there. You know, you want to have company wide feeling or culture of like, we're in the right place and we're in the right seats. You know, we're not doing a job that's not good for us. We're in the right seats and we fit the bill. We're the right people for that seat.
It's amazing how consistent that messaging is across every single like company owner that we talk about, right? It's like, I feel like every time we ask that question, we're like looking for that silver bullet. And we're like, man, how does Mark do this? And then it's just like, it's like a similar message for all the people that are, that have like well-run companies and good cultures, you know? Brett, you looked like you're about to say something.
No, I was just going to say, you're right. I think part of that is because people who run like good quality companies, and I hope that we are seen as that, industry wide, that they listen to each other too. When they see a quality company or they see somebody who's doing it right, they don't just try to reinvent the wheel. They try to learn and gain from that and, you know, and work with it. But I think it takes a lot of focus company wide to stay there too. You can't just drive it. You see a lot of companies get that culture, start driving there, and then they teeter off, they lose the focus somewhere. And before you know it, the company's going in a different direction than it was. And that's not always good. You know, I think what helps us stay true to our culture as a company is, A, we're family owned and operated, and we all feel very similarly about what we want to achieve, our goals. And our focus is quality tree care with the best people in the industry. That's kind of our big thing, is like, we want to provide the best quality is industry wide, you know, for tree care in general. And we want to do it with the most qualified workforce. And whoever is not that qualified, we're going to bring you up to speed as quick as we can and do what we can to invest in you. So I think that works for us. And having that as being like the core focus of the group means you stay in the same focus point. You keep moving in the same direction, regardless of what goes on around you and what other landscapes are out there, you know, as far as the economics and everything else of the world that we're going through right now.
Yeah, that discipline is just essential, right? And I suppose the industry you're in requires discipline and process, because it's life threatening just as much as it is just a bad day. And so, for listeners to just hear, like, you know, it, to how serious you take it is really important, and that messaging has to clearly come from a leadership role, and then an engagement role, and all the way through. And when that happens, it clicks, and then it gets a lot easier through every day to you know, see that message working. When it's something new and the repetition, and it just is that consistency, and we all struggle with that in the springtime, or those moments of speed, or just, you know, let's get this thing going. And so I think that is a healthy reminder, that just take a breath, slow it down, be consistent, and stay with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's a good point you bring up about the timing. Like, we get wrapped up in it's the hustle and bustle of spring, or we get into a storm season or whatever happens, and it tries to pull your focus away. So you have to be careful there that you don't get too wrapped up in the working in the business. And remember, you still have to work on the business.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Do you follow storms across the country, or do you stay right put?
Stay put, but we get plenty of storms here, right? Hurricanes in particular, and wind storms, and you name it.
Yeah, it was the Sandy, right? That hurricane, right? And obviously a pretty destructive one there too. And so a very serious time, right? Probably could be seen like us as snow contractors, like maybe there's big opportunities behind it, but it's really hard to see through some of that when you just know the amount of work ahead and the needs quickly. So, well. And how long has your business, and what's the history of your business?
Yeah, that's a great point. So we started in 1976, and at that time I was 5 years old, so I really wasn't doing anything for it. But my parents started our business. I'm actually, like you mentioned in the intro, I'm a third generation arborist, meaning my grandfather started doing tree care, got my father involved, but they didn't own their own business together. And my grandfather went on to do something else later on in life. My father fell in love with it, and he kind of chaperoned my brother and I along into the industry at a very young age, because we showed an interest in it. And it was a great, great thing in my life and his as well. And obviously this is the direction we took. So the business grew from there, but there was a very close family atmosphere early on, where it was all friends and family working for the business. There was nobody who was kind of like an outsider, and we only hired people we knew. That's that, because we were small enough, we didn't need to go outside of that. And as we started to grow, we had to reach outside of that. And I think one of the things we talked about and struggled with to make sure we kept is that family atmosphere that we enjoyed personally. Like, we didn't want to lose that feeling of we care for one another. You know, we want to hang out with one another outside of work. We want to know what's going on in your life. We're not just here to say hi at the water cooler and, you know, and try to undercut you to get myself further ahead kind of thing, like some parts of the different businesses are. We wanted to remain really close knit and keep that, even though as we grew. So that's been something we'd have discussed and struggled with at times with different people, because you hire someone that you think is going to be a good fit, and then you realize soon on that they don't really fit your core values or your culture of the company, and you have to make a decision there based on that.
Yeah, same family business, and there is the pros and the cons of all those working relationships. But early on, I think, right, that's the credit to, I think, the emerging businesses. You had someone you could trust, and you could call on moment's notice, and they help you out. And and I think we probably would hear many history stories that would say that's the foundations of how businesses started, and then it grew. And that cousin got a little annoying, and then you move right on. So,
yeah, I grew up in a family business too, Mark. But I don't work in it anymore. But I grew up also like working for my father at landscaping. And I got several siblings that are in around the business. How do you manage that relationship with your brother now? And what lessons have you learned? Because I'm sure we have some listeners that are operating in that same context. Like, what are some?
I talk to a lot of people from non-family businesses or other family businesses alike. A lot of things they say is, you know, family business must be hard or something, or I don't know how you do it and all this. And I say, yeah, I mean, I get that. I think what we've already said, one thing that's huge is respect. And we both, my brother and I, since we're talking about that relationship, we both feel like we both add value to the company in a different way, so we respect each other's opinion on that level. Like, he's not the champion tree climber, but he is the super knowledgeable sales guy who can diagnose and can see things that I don't even see. Like, he's a dendrology expert. Like, he teaches a course on how to pass the one of the hardest exams in tree care. It's now the licensed tree expert bill here in New Jersey. To become an LTE is like the ISA's board certified master arborist program, where it's super intense, and he teaches that. And so his focus was a little bit different than mine. It's still tree care, still benefits the company. But I think that respect and saying, you know what, you're one of the best in the field at what you do and your niche of what we do. I'm one of the best in my niche of what we do. We work together to benefit the company and provide that value for the, but even not just our clients, but also our other employees. So I think that helps. But there's definitely times where, you know, family things get in the way. It's not like it's anything that's kind of like groundbreaking. It's just, you know, when you're close to someone, doesn't matter if they're family or not, if you're very close to someone, you know, there's going to be points and times where you disagree, and you have to have enough of a feeling of trust that you can disagree. You don't just let it happen and then stew over it and have problems. You got to address it. And I think one of our successes, especially later in the last few years, as we grew, we do these weekly meetings with and we call each other out, because it's all family for the most part. There's my brother, there's myself, there's my mother and my father still active in the business. My sister-in-law is big in the office work. And now my brother's one daughter is working as an assistant to my mother for the bookworking, bookkeeping and such. And so we're all part of this manager's meeting, and we really have to call each other out and not feel like we're going to get hurt over it. It's just part. We're doing it for the right reason for the business, and we got to hold each other accountable.
Are you phasing in other managers to that meeting too? And how has that been for them as not part of the family?
You got to ask them, but you hit the nail on the head. Like, I think it was 3 years ago. We finally agreed to hire an outside person to help as a manager. We hired a general manager, this gentleman named Alan, who's a good friend of ours now, fits our culture great. He's a very good, trustworthy individual. But one thing I'm very in tune with him is to watch and make sure that he doesn't feel the family dynamic on a negative aspect as much as it could be. I'm sure he still feels it, but you know, he's dealing with people where he's working with a husband and a wife, a mom and a dad, you know, two brothers, and he's got to kind of find his way in between all that and work his way in and not feel like an outsider and still, again, have that feeling of trust where he can say, hey, you know, you guys can't act like that or don't do this because it's not smart for the company or whatever. And but we do managers meetings with different departments too, where we bring in people who run our plant healthcare and our tree and turf department or managers from other sides of the business, like our utility side. So they do have to be a part of all of it as well. And I think they have probably mixed feelings about being involved in a family business. I think they feel the good parts and they also feel the difficult parts of trying to be in part of a business when you're not the family.
I worked for a family owned third generation business and was the direct supervisor of one of the brothers of the owner who was older than me, which was fun. Fun is a good word for it. That's the nice word for it.
Yeah. Hard to be a supervisor for one of the owners, isn't it?
Share with us the path that led you to...
He didn't have ownership, but his name...
Oh.
So Mark, what brought you to go beyond the family business to, you know, I'm going to call it the sport of the tree climbing, these world championships? I guess, what attracted you? And for our listeners, what's that all about?
So what initially attracted me is before I started tree care at that young age of 12, I was really liking sports. So I did soccer early on for 5 years before that. I did wrestling for 3 years prior to being 12. I was going to join football, but I started doing tree work, and tree work happened for me on Saturdays, which meaning no Saturday meets with wrestling, no Saturday football games or practices. So I made a choice. And so part of me always felt like maybe I was going to miss that competition and the fun part of that, you know, and the sport. And so when tree climbing championships became apparent to me, I realized like, this could be a nice fit for me. I get to do the competition I wanted and challenge myself. And it started out with, let's just see how we do, because mentors of mine say, come on, try it. You'll do good. You'll have fun, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay. I tried it and I failed miserably personally. My first event in New Jersey, for example, I think there was probably about 25 competitors. And I actually placed fifth overall because I was just good enough to do good in a lot of the events. But I had some embarrassing moments that just didn't sit well with me where I said, man, I made such a big mistake. I could have did so much better. So it drove me to come back and say, I'm going to improve on that. Once that happened, I took second place next year to the champ who was the champ year prior. And I qualified to go to the world championships, which was local. I had to pay my own way, but it was in Philadelphia. I'm from New Jersey. So I said, oh, I'll take the drive over and see what that's all about. And I went there. And again, I failed miserably. You know, I felt like I was, you know, basically the underdog of the whole bunch. I didn't feel confident. And when I started looking around at their skill level, I looked at their gear and I just felt intimidated. And I performed like I was intimidated. And there was a gentleman I later found out was a two-time world champion from California, Sam Noonan, who grabbed me that year. He's helping to run the event. Same age as my father, actually. Grabbed me and he said, listen, he says, you got natural talent. He says, don't walk away from this because you're frustrated. You had bad luck. Just get over it. And he said, you're going to come back next year. It's in California. And if you don't, I'm coming looking for you. And I said, he's a big guy. I said, I don't want Sam coming looking for me. But it was that embracing that community vibe that people encourage you when you do wrong in a competition setting. They're not happy that you didn't do well. They want you to do well. And that grabbed me because that made me feel like I do in my own environment, very comfortable, very kind of close-knit, family-knit environment. And I said, this competition thing could be fun. And so then the focus shifted from let's see how good you are to let's see California and go say hi to Sam. And then it became more people and more competitors. And then it was worldwide that I started meeting friends from Italy, from Australia, you name it. And I'd see them once a year. So it was like a motivation. And the spinoff of all of it, just to come full circle, is it made me want to get better daily and be in tune with the safest technique. So I didn't get slammed for safety on the score sheets. And it made me a safer, more motivated arborist daily in the workplace.
Well, I can only imagine, right? When you can make a safety of fun and competitive or piece to it, it just resonates and it just settles in there more. Are other folks from your company also participating? Have anybody been inspired by what you've done to give it a try?
Yeah, a lot through the years. Actually, the state champion from New Jersey, who I actually didn't win it 21 times straight. I won it 21 times, but there was one year I didn't. Because I had some mistakes, and the guy who took first that year was my trainee from my company, this guy Rory McGinnis. And Rory went on to win it again a couple of years after I stopped competing. So I haven't competed since I guess 2015. They haven't run one the last 2 years because of COVID, but I didn't compete for I guess 3 years straight, and he won it. And we had a lot of climbers that work for me go through and compete and do well, top 10 finishes. And it was a fun vibe because they would all practice together and they would want to show each other like new techniques and new gear and get new gear in it. And it's motivating in the workplace because now it's like I mentioned when we started this conversation, like I get up in the morning to go to work and I'm not like, oh, I got to go to work today. I mean, sure, once in a while I'm tired or I'm not really in the mood, the weather's horrible, whatever, but I still do it. I don't hate it. But I almost always want to go to work. You know, that's the majority of my days are spent where I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of work we're going to do and feeling like we provide a great skill for our clients, whoever they are, you know? So I think that's powerful. And that comes from the competition. Really, it made me want to be the best that I could be more so than I already did, you know, or anyone around me did.
That's so cool. I think what I'm really interested in is the international aspect and like your friends that you made internationally. Right. So Obviously the world is green. So there's like landscapers and like green industry professionals across across the world. And I think sometimes we forget about that in our circles because we're so focused on like our local or national circles. And I've followed a couple Instagram accounts like for landscapers like out in Germany and Netherlands to see like how they handle like their installs and stuff like that. Really interesting. But what are things that you pulled away from people that you've met internationally that you thought was pretty novel, or maybe not even novel, but something different than that we do here or that you do here?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is similar, like in different ways. I'll tell you what's a huge difference from the US to other markets is the equipment we use. Like when we do jobs like I'm doing today, we have like whole tree chippers on the street here, big chip trucks. I have a 110 ton crane outside my window waiting for me to jump on it again. We do things big because we have space. I did workshops in Norway, and like our normal chippers here are 18 inch minimum. You know, like you can fit an 18 inch log in there and chip the whole tree. When I go to Norway, you're lucky to see something over 6 inch. You know, in Italy, same thing. The space is not there. They use small machines. They think everything's so big here. They got small trucks, tight truck, because the roads are smaller. Space is just not an option for them. So that's big. And other thing that's different too, is you don't see a lot of companies like our model in other countries yet that I've found. There's a few that I found, which is they're kind of unique, but a lot of them, they have niches they fill and that's it. And a lot of them stay small on purpose. When they have a big job, they kind of get a collaboration going with other companies and they all work together when needed, but they keep it kind of small, almost like for example, friends in Italy, they'll do a lot of like property maintenance, landscaping included, and they'll do all the work they can on their own throughout the year and only pull in two or three or four other guys or girls when they need extra help for a big removal, for example, you know, so it's kind of a different model, but that's the biggest difference. Most everything else is pretty similar, apart from some legislation here and there. Like you mentioned, Germany's a little different with tickets. You need a ticket for different like disciplines of tree care to be able to do tree care, you know, legally.
Mm-hmm. Well, impressive. And the and I can only imagine the pressure your team surround you, like, well, they've seen how fast you go up a tree, and then you're like, guys, you can, I know you could hustle up there faster, right? I saw you in competition go up that tree in 35 seconds. It's time to go. So, but I like the integration of that, like even NCLC for us, right? When you get to actually compete with what your professional job is, it's a unique excitement around it. And to see when we have a lot of students come together and do the arboriculture techniques, do skid steer operation, do landscape planting or design, I think, again, it takes an element we're very unique in our industry to say that we have a competition. There's athleticism involved in what we do and how we do it. And we have a way to measure that. And it's great to, I think, put that on in the front there. So tell us about, well, first off, what kind of chainsaws do you use? I think that's an important statement to ask, as our sponsor would love to know that one.
Well, I think you know that answer already in the logo on my hat here. Steel is my brand of choice. And to be honest with you, the reason we started working together was probably twofold. But I was working with Steel equipment, and that was my favorite brand already. So it was authentic to me. And part two of that was we both had a nice, like, kind of central focus. We both care very deeply about helping the industry and making things safe as possible. And Steel loves having safe, like, clients, because a safer client is a longer lived client, a longer working client. And that's good for business too, but they really genuinely care. So that's why I developed a relationship with Steel, and that's why it's lasted. I mean, this is our 20th year working together, you know? So I think that tells you we hit it right. We were directly aligned properly to have the right relationship.
Well, and that authenticity of what safety means, again, I think you have to take it serious in the tree care industry, but then to your passion behind it, no doubt you'd be a strong spokesperson for Steel and that and the tree care world.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It means a lot to me, because like people ask me, like, why do you take time off from work and like go to California and teach a workshop? Like, is it money? And it's really, obviously, I think a lot of us know, like, if you stay home and do your regular work, a lot of times you can make more money at home, because it's going to benefit you more so than just the daily wage you're making. You're going to grow your business and whatever. So it's way more than that, you know? So I always kind of view things very simply of like, can I check a couple boxes? Like if somebody says, hey, do you want to do this media broadcast for whatever, for NBC? I say, okay, what's it going to be about? Will it give me an opportunity to say, hey, trees are super valuable. They're really important to us. B, you need to care for them properly. They don't all just take care of themselves. And C, hire a professional. And this is how you find a professional. Then I'm in. If I can hit one of those boxes, or better yet, multiple, I'm in. And on the professional side, if you give me an opportunity to help add safety, if you give me an opportunity to help you figure out things that'll make you quicker at work, so you're more effective, or if I can help you just enjoy being an arborist more, then those boxes are checked and I'm all in then too, because those are my driving forces. Those are the things that I look to try to do outside of the daily workplace, and even internally with my own company. I'm really, my focus personally a lot of times is trying to drive those same directions with my employees.
Well, that you're surrounded by like folks, right? So we certainly are not doing this podcast because of the paycheck, because we actually haven't seen a paycheck yet on this podcast. but those moments are to help this industry, and we've all participated with, you know, within, you know, leadership opportunities within the association, and even through the competition NCLC. And so I think it resonates really well, and we hope our listeners understand the bigger parts are, you have a day job, and that's going to be fun and it's going to be rewarding. We hope you love it every day, but there's in some of these worlds, there's these competitions. You can make it about your life, and then the give back always outweighs I think the receiving part of this in this industry. So I think that's, you've told that story well today.
Yeah, and I can't agree more. You know, I think one of the most rewarding things that I can think of is to walk away feeling like you helped somebody. You know, even as I mentioned yesterday, a simple thing of having someone come visit my company. Is it an inconvenience? Yes, a little bit, because now I got to tell him what we're doing and make sure he knows what to do to be safe. And I'm bringing an outsider in and we have to sign a safety form and get insurance for him to make sure he's appropriately cared for on a job site, because he's going to be walking around our job site. But what it does, it allows us to discuss things that either helps me learn something, but if nothing else, it helps me help him gain something. And walking away from a relationship on any level where you feel like you're helping someone, improving their life on any level, to me is like the greatest gift anyone gives you. I'm not really doing this to really help him as much as I selfishly am feeling like I'm helping myself. You know, I mean, I'm trying to give back. That's the focus. But I also realize how good it makes me feel to do that. And I think when you feel that, it's freeing, you know, it's really a great feeling, and it makes you want to do more, be part of an organization, you know, donate your time. I was past president of the New Jersey ISA and was on a trustee for like probably 9 years prior, and I didn't have to. I could have moved in quick and got out quick, but you know, I think, you know, being a part of those organizations rubs off on you, but also does a world of good for you, for your spirit as well.
Well, we all know how much those cranes cost an hour to sit out there. So we have a fun segment. Miles, why don't you lead us through what that end of the segment is here?
You got it. Yeah. So we usually wrap up these podcasts with the rose and thorn, we call it. So rose is what's going on well in your life, professionally, personally, whatever you want, pick your pick. And then the thorn is what maybe it's not going so well, or places for improvement, opportunities. Usually we round robin it. So who wants to kick us off?
I don't mind starting. I was out for a bike ride yesterday, and maybe 800 feet from my driveway, I had my first really, really close traffic accident. Managed to dodge the truck by about an inch and a half by bailing on the ground and breaking my brakes fall. So it was a little bit of a thorn, but I'm okay. Save me, you know, maybe a suspect hairline fracture in the hand, but the bike's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. So happy to walk away from that one.
Let's see here. For me, busy spring brings and continue that probably same message week after week here, but brings opportunities. I'll call them opportunities, not thorns, but like always fine tuning adjustments, making sure people are happy. You know, I think staying consistent with the process. And then this messaging today's was just, you know, stay with it, be disciplined, and the message will come clear. So, I'll take those as more opportunities than thorns. And it's blue skies and the Northeast, and that at least in Rochester did not happen at all. So I'm gonna take that as a big win, and I truly appreciate celebrating 52 episodes with you guys and the team and Luke and Macy and everybody. That's been a really wild ride. So that's a lot of fun. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could say a lot of things. You know, roses and thorns happen every day almost, you know. But I guess if I had to pick one off the hip, I'd say COVID is probably a rose and a thorn. You know, you can look at things in two ways in everything in life. You can look at the bad parts or you could find the good parts. You know, it's your choice. And the bad parts of COVID is obvious for most people. But I actually hit my family pretty hard recently. My brother and my sister-in-law got it. They gave it to their kids. My parents got it. A couple people within the company had it, and we've had it three times within the company. We've had to walk through. That's been a thorn, a difficult time. The rosy part of it is, all being said, we pulled together as a company. We were 5 out of 7 people in the office were down. So 2 people had to do everything, and other people like myself filled in. And everybody came away feeling like we're a stronger team because of it. And thank God all my family members are recovering nicely from it. We didn't have any serious complications. And to your point, I think 2020 was our busiest year ever. You know, revenue grew by 30% year over year, even with COVID. So you know, there's a silver lining in everything. You just got to be open to it.
You, Miles?
Yeah. Rose is my thumb is like got full motion back. I like shattered this bone in my thumb skiing. So we're back. And also made some changes personally too, like getting up in the morning, exercising, make sure I hit the gym before I start off my workday, nice and early. Definitely highly recommend it. It's a great habit. I've been doing it for like the past like 3 weeks now, and like I can't see my day actually going any other way, because you lose that. I mean, you take for granted, I think, growing up working outside, like it forces you, you know, 7 o'clock starts out the door in the truck. But once you're like inside an office, like working every day, you like, I don't think I've realized like how much like actually getting outside, doing something, lifting something with my body actually, you know, affected my mental health. So
we see each other on is this podcast, and we're all sitting in the same spot. So it's almost like, do we actually get up from this work? No. I mean, we do. We actually do things. But if this is ever video, like all you all do is just sit around, right? And so, but to like Mark's out and live in action, I think we could start moving around and start going outside for these beautiful weather.
Yeah.
So
try
to get around.
I care around this
season two. There's the cliffhanger, Neil, right? Season two, we're going outside.
Yeah, I could have did this from outside up in the tree today. It would have been fun. It would have been easy, but it's a little noisy. I don't know if you guys can see out there, but that's where I could have did that from the top of that crane. So
is that your crane, or are you guys renting that?
No, it's a rental. That's a rental. Okay. That's like a $1.4 million crane, if I know correctly. So I'm not trying to buy that right now.
Yeah, I was curious.
That's a lot of trees. That's a lot of tree work for a crane. But no, yeah, we rent them.
That's cool. All right, cool. Well, yeah, I don't really have any thorns, by the way, so it's good.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying the peace and quiet for now until it comes back. So Mark, thanks again for joining us. Really appreciate your time. Hopefully we'll connect somewhere along the lines again. Yeah, thanks for joining the podcast. And also thank you to our listeners. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share it to coworkers, friends, family, the whole deal. Rate us 5 stars. Any other promo? Go buy steel products. Okay.
There you go. I was gonna say it, but you got me. Thank you guys. So I appreciate being here. I hope I see you again in season two. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll see you.
Alrighty, guys. See ya.